Do automotive retailers even have a mobility problem? The framing of this question suggests that a problem has been identified, though perhaps under a false pretense. Think back to products and services that tech companies have introduced: Google Glass, Microsoft Zoom, or Amazon's Fire Phone. These were an attempt to solve real problems. But what really were the problems that these products were solving? In episode 95, we hear from Russ Lemmer, Executive VP and General Manager of Dealerware, a fully connected, fully digital fleet management platform. His knowledge and experience in learning the art of problem framing led to a successful acquisition of SilverCar, a car rental mobility solution which he helped co-found and was acquired by Audi in 2017. His process to uncover business problems entails applying the scientific methodology of identifying the situation, complication, stating a hypothesis, and testing to confirm or disprove the hypothesis. If performed correctly, this rigorous process results in iterations of a product until it actually solves a real problem. Tune in to hear how Russ and Dealerware have identified the problem of mobility within an automotive retail operation. Before we get to today's episode, rather than sharing with you a listener car buying story, we want to pass along a helpful car shopping tip. And a single tip it is. From previous episodes, you've heard us share how car buyers can get a better experience. While a better experience is subjective, it is nonetheless obtainable. But before you become a car buyer, you are first a car shopper. Unequivocally, our car shopping process starts online by visiting automaker websites, automotive enthusiast media sites, and YouTube. Once you've consumed the information online, the next step is usually visiting the dreaded dealership to see and feel the cars of choice. Maybe you'll visit a retailer on the weekend when you have hours of free time, or maybe you'll squeeze in a visit during lunchtime of the work week. In either case, selecting the car of choice requires you to block off time in order to tour all the retailers. But there is a better option for you. For our listeners based in Southern California, the next few months are filled with a great time to shop because there are three big auto shows. The first auto show is the Orange County Auto Show, which takes place at the Anaheim Convention Center October 3rd through the 6th. The next auto show is one of the premier auto shows in the country. The LA Auto Show kicks off on November 22nd until December 1st at the LA Convention Center. And the last auto show for Southern Californians is the San Diego Auto Show, and that occurs January 1st through the 5th at the San Diego Convention Center. These auto shows are a great opportunity to see and feel the cars of interest, and it removes the inconvenience of making multiple visits to automotive retailers. Visit the episode page for more information on these auto shows, and be sure you subscribe and follow Wisco Weekly on our social media channels. We will be at the OC Auto Show and LA Auto Show, and we'll be sharing our experience and knowledge with you. Now, let's get into the show.
You are now tuned in to the Wisco Weekly Experience.
Mabuhay, bienvenidos, vitete, velkommen, and welcome to Wisco Weekly. This is the Automotive and Mobility Podcast giving you university education. I'm your host, Dennis Wisco, alongside with my good friend, transportation correspondent, Forbes.com contributor, and overall sci-fi nerd, Mr. Rudy Solo. Rudy, by the way, this episode is brought to you by Re-Raw Irish Pub.
the leaders in a breakfast that Rudy will shortly tell us about, as well as Automotive Mastermind, the leaders in predictive analytics. Rudy, you had a quite delicious breakfast here at ReRaw.
I did.
And tell us about it. Why was it so amazing?
It was an egg sandwich, and it wasn't provided to me by a robot. It was a human. It was the human element where, you know, it was handed to me, it was put on the table, and it just tasted better.
You got this VIP experience.
I got the VIP experience. I know you got coffee today by a robot, so it's the human versus robot thing that I'm obsessed with. I just keep obsessing over
it. Well, I greatly enjoyed my coffee delivered by a robot, just as much as you had enjoyed your breakfast delivered by a human.
Yeah, I'm very happy with it. Maybe we can get him to service get a beer at some point, you know?
Or... sure. Okay. Men, women, and children, I want to welcome to the show a very, very, let's call it, interesting guest. I've had the chance to follow a company that he co-founded for some time. I'm a big, big Audi enthusiast fan in general. And so I've heard about this company that he helped co-founded. And now he is helping build a new company that will operate in the dealership space. So Men, Women, and Children, please welcome to the show the co-founder of Dealerware, Mr. Russ Lemmer. Russ, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
So Russ, you're a very, very charismatic guy. I mean, there's no doubt any Google search of you, you're very charismatic when you speak on the stage. And furthermore, the way that you actually speak about the problems that are going on in the automotive space is certainly an art form. And you have stated that at a company you previously worked at, Bain, that you learned the art of problem framing and solving. So I'm hoping you can help educate us on what that means exactly.
Yeah, sure. So before founding the companies that I did a few years ago, I worked at Bain. I was there for 4 years. And from Bain, I went on to work in venture capital. And one of the key learnings that I developed at Bain was exactly what you said, is how to think about problem solving. So consultants, when they're brought in, they're typically brought in to deal with a business or a C-suite's most pressing issues. They're complicated. They're not easy to solve. They may have no single right answer, and sometimes they're existential. And so when we put all of that together as a consultant, you start to think, okay, well, if we need to be smart about how we solve this problem, we need to frame the problem. And so what we started to do was come up with what I would say is a system that looks very much like four things put together. You have a situation, you have a complication, you have a hypothesis that you think might solve that complication, and then you build a series of key questions around that hypothesis to say, how do we prove or disprove these key questions to support or disprove the hypothesis? And as you start to get some of this feedback, it can be based on interviews, it can be based on data analysis, it can be based on market intelligence, you realize this is the right hypothesis or it's not, and you cancel out that hypothesis and then focus on a new one to address the problem, the situation, and the complication.
Absolutely love that. Goddamn, I love fucking science. Excuse my language. I get so excited about when people talk science and hypothesis and testing.
I do too. What would be great, if it's possible and you feel comfortable doing this, could you give a very simple example?
Sure. So
here was the problem that I solved, and hopefully it's kind of related to, you know, automotive.
I mean, yeah, I presume that you took some of that with Silver Car or in Dealerware.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And it's a question, actually, when I mentor entrepreneurs today, I ask them a very simple question: what problem are you solving?
Okay.
Right. So when I was in consulting, and especially when I was in venture capital, and you see a lot of money being poured into the space more and more every day, you have really smart people building really elegant solutions to problems that don't exist.
Right, okay.
Right, so I go back and I look at things like Google Glass. What problem did Google Glass actually attempt to solve? Right, were we walking around saying, hey, we don't have a real-time information feed in front of our eyeballs that can identify everything without us having to think about it? And I would say, no, we didn't really have that problem, but Google built a solution for it and it didn't really work. It didn't find a marketplace, it wasn't the right fit. And so when I think about the situation, the complication, the hypothesis, and the key questions, let's take something like Silver Car, right? So Silver Car, a company I helped co-found, situation was that airport car rental was a giant market that across the travel category had some of the lowest loyalty and satisfaction scores, period. So airlines, hotels, other things, all were doing better than car rental. The complication was that there wasn't a lot of digital first customer experience driven players in the market, yep. right? So 97% of that market is owned by Hertz, Avis, or Enterprise in some form. And so our hypothesis was that if you deliver a consistent and premium experience every time a customer travels and you remove all the friction typically associated with car rental travel, like lines and counters and paperwork, trickery around the fuel charges and the fuel packages, you have tiger teeth and gates. If you use technology in a mobile app to remove all of that and make it seamless, you could build a consumer champion brand that could challenge the industry. Could win the hearts and minds of travelers, and you could build a company on that.
And Rudy, I will tell you this, that is exactly what Silver Car has done. I mean, it's actually almost, it maybe eerie to like hear from the founder and like in concept, this is what you were, how you were designing it. And from an actual experience standpoint, that's exactly how it played out. I mean, talk about the human element in a rental car transaction, very, very minimized. Everything just you can do at the stroke of clicking buttons and everything available on your mobile device.
And now it seems pretty basic in 2019, use an app to get in a car, drive off seamlessly, was a really foreign idea to the industry in 2011 and 2012 when we got started. But as first mover and customer champion, we have an NPS, if you know the Net Promoter Score, of around 85, and have hovered around that for about 5 years, which is north of Apple, north of USAA. Mm-hmm. You saw a lot of the bigger brands start to follow suit. How do we use apps? How do we remove friction from the process? How do we compete with that? So it's not just asset management across what I call a Skittles bag of car colors that are in a lot, where you get the purple PT Cruiser or the yellow Malibu, you end up with something you don't want. You get the silver Audi every single time, and it's done on an app so that you don't have to worry too much about trying to travel. You just start traveling.
All right. So on one hand, I get all this, and obviously it's like, okay, that in hindsight, it's 2020, it makes all sense. I will tell you though, I'm unconvinced at the utilization and monetization of a fleet department in a dealership. Obviously, this is what Dealerware does.
I too am unconvinced. When you frame it like that.
Okay, right? Actually, please. Well, okay, tell me. Go ahead.
So if you think about the Silver Car model, which is airport car rental, and moving that to a dealership, right? Like ask the same question. What problem are you solving if you introduce rental at the dealership, right? You would have to assume that there's some big swath of customers out there in a local marketplace that are clamoring to go to the dealership to get their hands on a short-term vehicle that they just can't otherwise get, right? So the risk in offering that if you're a dealer is one, you have to fleet up, right? Because you wanna make sure that if you yep. offer this to customers, you have the cars that are readily available and you don't get people coming onto your lot and then not having anything for them. That costs money, right? Cars are the most expensive thing in automotive. In fact, my opinion is that cars are just too expensive, period, which is why a lot of these models actually struggle. So you have to get the utilization right. You have to worry about customer acquisition. You have to worry about short-term economics. You have to worry about LTVs. It's an entirely different business model for dealers who are very, very good at selling cars and servicing cars. But renting, loaning, sharing, managing from a fleet perspective, it's not a core competence that has been in their hands for a long time.
Right.
And it's not something that they have focused on, which is, from my perspective, a little weird to see this big gaslighting problem around mobility, right? We talk about mobility a lot, but I don't think it's ever consistently defined. I think if I asked you mobility and I asked you mobility, we'd have different answers.
Well, and almost to that end too, I think this is where, you know, Rudy and I kind of come from different backgrounds, and we actually, you know, understand mobility differently in that from the dealership world, mobility is usually associated with disabled or solving disabled challenges, right?
Yeah, paratransit.
Paratransit, like right?
I'm a big CrossFitter, and we talk about mobility a lot, being able to move your joints around, right?
Rudy has on the government side of things what mobility means, so.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you that one of the issues with this, the term that's being thrown around constantly, and I'm guilty of it, the mobility term is, what's the definition?
It's crutch work.
It's Los Angeles County Economic Development Corporation. I serve as a co-chair of the E4 Mobility Alliance. It had that when I and some other people took over as co-chair, one of the things that we wanted to do was to actually define mobility. It's been 9 months now.
Yeah.
And we still can't come up with an all-encompassing, all-inclusive word that doesn't cause any confusion. It's so hard depending upon who the ultimate you know, Sayer or person that has the mobility.
Yeah, it's like, is it the customer? Like, who's the customer? And are they a customer or are they a citizen?
For example, we at my law firm, we started an autonomous vehicle initiative like several years ago. And then I told them, I said, guys, that's way too narrow. We need to expand this. We need to have mobility in the title. One of my partners who works a lot in the healthcare industry says, hey, the word mobility means something completely different when you're talking about healthcare. And the mobility there is more along the lines of paratransit and handicapped folks and everything. Like, and then it hit me. I was like, wow, like depending upon what industry you're in or how you're using that word, you can actually cause more confusion than it's worth.
Yeah.
So then this concept of mobility, very new in the dealership world, but I would argue that Dealerware is trying to solve these mobility challenges, correct? Or again, maybe—
Half correct.
Okay.
Right,
okay.
So the way I might respond is with a question, and I would say, do we have a mobility problem at the dealership?
I see that, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, right. And this is the framing, sure, again. So, yeah, great, you start with the question and then you go in from there.
So the way I think about it is actually slightly different. I think the problem statement and then the hypothesis statement. And I think the problem statement is we have a dealership profitability problem. And mobility might be a partial solution to improving that problem, right? So it's unclear, you read Bloomberg, you read these big forecasts, like are we at peak car for retail automotive? Yes or no? We're probably getting pretty close. It's at least asymptotic if it's not starting to flat or decline.
Right.
But I do think that we're at peak margin from a retail perspective. So as margins on units continue to be pressured downward because of increasing competition and a smaller market, dealers are looking for the opportunity to profit from other things. Mm-hmm. And other things is a big bucket. And two ways to profit, right? You can save money or you can create money. And mobility, as far as I'm concerned, is creating a new revenue stream at the dealership that might alleviate some of the core business profitability problems. So that's a long windup. But if we move back to the, what's the problem we're trying to solve with Dealerware? That's a dealer profitability problem. So in the micro instance of running a single dealership, you typically will see something that's called a loaner fleet or a courtesy fleet, mm-hmm, or something like that. Yep. Those are programs that are set in tone at the manufacturing level, and then they're typically subsidized and incented at the dealer level to say, hey, I want you to take on these 10 or these 200 cars so that when your customers come in with a personal problem on their own vehicle, they have a vehicle that they can get in while you work on that RO, right? So that is the courtesy and the loaner thing. So these dealers are forced to take on these fleets so that they can better service their service customers.
Okay.
But if we rewind about 5 minutes, what I said before, they're great at selling cars, they're great at servicing cars. Renting, loaning, sharing is foreign to them. So Dealerware is a fleet management platform that removes all the brain burn, all the inefficiency from managing that loaner or that courtesy fleet. Right, so we allow customers, our dealer customers, to save money on individual loan transactions. So the fuel that you might use when you go out for 3 days, the tolls you might use as you go to and from work while you're in the loaner car. We give them connected cars, which makes visibility into the fleet and fleet operations far more real time and far more intelligent. So they start to increase utilization over time and they can do more ROs with the same number of vehicles. And then longest term, it's all about customer loyalty. Right. So if you're in a world, where vehicle volumes are essentially flat, the only way you can grow is to steal share from someone else.
Right.
And so if you offer a better experience at that dealership where I don't have to wait 30 minutes to get a loaner car, fill out all the paperwork at the loaner desk, a process that feels like 1980s car rental, I can do it in 90 seconds or less. It's all digitalized. It's text message based. I'm on my way. I will come back and spend a higher share of my wallet at your dealership because you're giving me my time back, you're creating better experiences. So saving money and creating better experiences is what we do with the current fleet problem that exists at dealerships today.
And so I understand all that. And I think that what you've demonstrated with Silvercar I could see it playing out very consistently through a dealership adopting Dealerware software platform. I think this would, I guess one of the areas I'm probably still unconvinced about, and you had actually already touched upon this, if we look at the macro of fleet management across the dealership spectrum, tell me what you see on a macro point of view.
So the way that we look at dealerships is to say every single car that's on that dealer lot is part of a fleet, Now, maybe not in the traditional sense that we think of a commercial fleet, but it's a single unit that's part of a collection of units on the dealership lot. And our thesis is that through automation, connectivity, and customer experience, dealers can start to extract more profit per vehicle from everything on their lot. So simple questions like lot audits: where is a particular vehicle? What's that current battery level? Who was the last employee of mine to interact with that vehicle? Right now, dealerships typically send bodies out into the parking lot to do all of that. You put a hand on a hood, you write down on a clipboard. Bodies cost money. It's a productivity equation, right? So if you can connect that car and have it report back into you automatically via a software as a service platform, you don't need as many bodies out on the lot figuring these things out. And that's a simple, where's my car and what's going on with it, to now I have a loaner fleet, right? And I need to manage cars and contracts and customers across this. And that fleet is depreciating, and it's typically done on program depreciation set by the OEM. But as we know, depreciation by vehicle, VIN by VIN, can vary widely by location, by brand, by dealership. So how do I manage depreciation across all of these cars? And to get into the point we talked about earlier, if and when mobility does go mainstream, which for our purposes, let's define that as car rental at the dealership,
yeah,
whether it's
good.
By good. Day, yep. By week, or by month, yeah, which sure. is Makes the yep. fancy way now called subscription,
yeah.
right, is to say, hey, I have a number of units. Am I best off right now selling that unit, renting that unit, or loaning that unit, right? Those are really the three questions that dealers should be asking as they look at their entire assortment or their portfolio. And right now, none of them really rent it. But if you are upside down in book value versus market value from a depreciation standpoint, if you hold that car a little bit longer, maybe you rent it out a few times, you can monetize it before you sell it and lose less money on a book versus market value dissonance.
Is there a, you know, I would presume at some point what would happen is upon adopting this software, that dealers will also face some kind of marketing challenge in the fact that, you know, you're educating your customer, hey, here's an additional benefit of doing service with us.
Yep.
Would you agree with that?
From the dealer side, not necessarily. We're a B2B software. So right. A customer or consumer never hears the name Dealerware.
I know they don't hear Dealerware, but a dealer will still have to educate their customers of the fact that, hey, look, if you want to use some of this, you know, this loaner program itself,
yep.
You know, yes, they may never know Dealerware, but it's still a benefit to customers where they sure. can access these cars.
That's what's interesting about how we built Dealerware. I always say that we built it 6 times. In the first 5, we got it wrong. The original hypothesis was that we could use something like the Silver Car app, which is a bespoke airport car rental app,
yep.
jam it into dealerships and just have the magic flow. And what we realized is that didn't work at the dealership, let alone all the dealerships that we wanted to serve. Everybody was having trouble managing service loaners, and the solution that we showed up with, it was built for airports, didn't work. It fundamentally broke down. Consumers that were buying 60, 70, 80,000 cars and bringing them in once a year for service didn't want to have to download an app, didn't want to have to credential themselves. They wanted the white glove experience. They wanted to be in and out. They come in with a bit of the crocodile brain of, I'm going to get charged too much for my service. I'm already defensive. I don't now want to have to download this thing. It's take care of me.
It's like you read my mind. It's like he stole my mind.
Right,
and we spend a lot of time, researching personas and consumers.
I am your consumer. I am that. What did you call me yesterday? Mr. Super High Maintenance?
Yeah, super high. You're very high maintenance.
But you're right. I mean, if you're taking that into account and addressing it, then that's great for dealers.
Yeah, and so that's what we do. It's expectations versus reality. And I think before Dealerware showed up, it typically took 20 to 30 minutes to get a loaner car. You had first meet with your service advisor. They walked you over to a loan car desk, which may have been staffed or not. You're waiting around. If there's somebody in front of you, you're processing serial. So now if you have a 20-minute experience per person, it starts to grow in geometric length, where you can have a line out the door and down the street because you're processing one customer at a time. And so when we talked about problems and friction and how do you solve this as a new budding startup that could become something like Dealerware, we said, hey, what if we put it all on a mobile device? And we gave that app to dealership employees so that everybody could credential anybody. And let's make it stupid simple to use so that you can just scan the barcode on the back of a driver's license and get all the information that you might need from a customer without having them fill it out on a form, carbon copied, signed in triplicate.
That happened to me. I had a car that I maintained service, you know, because they
convince you that you should only come to the auto dealer in order to maintain, you know, the resale value. And one day when they needed to get me a loaner car, service guy took a little while. Then he took me over to the desk. Lady wasn't even sitting there. And there were 7 people ahead of me.
Yep.
I think I was waiting there for about 1 hour and 15 minutes. After that experience, I just went to an aftermarket mechanic going forward. Just going forward, I was like, I don't ever want to deal with that ever again. And this aftermarket mechanic is a mile from my house. I drop off my car and I walk home. Like I just don't want to deal with having to waste 1.5 hours sitting someplace like that. Yeah. So yeah, that it is. You're clearly, you've identified this and you've created software to address it. I just want to give my experience that it made me stop going to that dealer, and now I really don't have any loyalty to them whatsoever. Yeah.
In what might be an interesting way to win you back, right, is to not only improve that, but what if we could reverse it, right? So when you're stuck behind a loaner desk and you have paperwork, every transaction you do has to take place at that desk. But when you put the transaction on a mobile device, what if I said, hey, instead of walking home after you drop off your car, I'll come to you. I'll open up that contract on a mobile device in your driveway. I'll take your car back to my dealership for service, and I'll leave the loaner car with you. You never have to step foot in the dealership. I mean, talk about a step change or a radical change in dealership
experience.
That would
definitely make
that would make a very happy Rudy. This crocodile brain would feel a little bit better. Yes. Can dealerware do that?
Oh, for sure.
That's great.
For sure. And that's what we talk to dealerships about. And I think this becomes like the existential question as a modern retailer is, are you better off putting a movie theater in your dealership or a nail salon like we've seen? Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Right. You're building these $20 million Taj Mahals and nobody actually wants to spend any time there.
Yep.
Why not invest your resources in customer experience so that it can happen on your terms away from the dealership? And what we've seen, even when you do that, is that ROs, the typical RO size, goes up 200 to 300%. You give me my time back, I am more than happy to open up my wallet and pay you for all the repairs you suggest, because now I'm not going in with a crocodile brain. I'm no longer approaching it from a place of fear, saying these guys are going to extort me the minute I set foot on that. You can handle it all from your robe and your slippers in your driveway. You're a lot more comfortable, and longer term, you become a lot more loyal.
Do not want to see a picture of Rudy in his robe on the driveway.
I don't want
for radio, not TV. Exactly.
The value of time is serious. If anybody in any industry trying to sell anything, whether it's cars, whether it's real estate, whether it's anything, if they're not taking into account their customers' time, then they're going to fail. Because time, even though we have smartphones and we can do so much more on the fly now, and maybe some people think that we have all the time in the world, we have less time in the world because we're just constantly busy.
Yeah.
So everybody has to think of what the number one thing that my customer cares about is time. And if I'm going to take away any of that time, and there's some other service out there that's going to give them back some time or not have an impact on their time, that other service is always going to win, even if they're more expensive, period.
This micro operation of a dealership, of fleet management, that dealerware is super hyper focused on, and what you've talked about, it's like I can see the opportunity for some sort of scale, right?
Yep.
Where there is an ecosystem now around this,
exactly.
around what you guys are just doing in an isolated case right now. Part of that ecosystem, I know you guys have announced some recent partnerships with insurance companies, so they would be part of the ecosystem.
Yep.
You need to have the customer culture also subscribe to this through the dealership. You need the dealerships to buy into it. You have a relationship to some degree, maybe you could clarify it, with one automaker at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But what are the conversations like, if you were to compare and contrast the conversations between automakers versus dealers when it comes to dealerware and just this idea of fleet management?
Sure. It's something that we get more educated on every day. And so again, I come back to it. What are the problems that each of these stakeholders faces?
Right.
The dealer has a profitability problem.
Okay.
Right, like they don't necessarily want to take on more units if they're not making money on those units, right? So what dealerware does today on behalf of the dealership is that allows them to extract more value and more profit per vehicle on their lot.
Okay.
You switch over to the other stakeholder, the OEM, right? they want to keep those factories running. They want to pump out units. That is how they grow. That is how they make their money. So what seems to be is this inevitable collusion of two different stakeholders wanting two different things, which is, hey, I don't want more units as a dealer because it's going to cost me more money. And mm-hmm. the OEM saying, mm-hmm. hey, take more units. That's the only way we can grow. Mm-hmm. So where I think DealerWare sits nicely in the middle is a software platform that enables both of these stakeholders to alleviate their most pressing problem. Dealerships can attack dealership profitability. They can extract more value from the cars that are on their lots, whether they're in the service loaner program or just sitting around the three or four different lots they might manage. And OEMs are looking for a software provider that can help them explore the idea of mobility.
And right? just the ease of once an automaker is trying to push these cars onto the dealership, again, that still is work for the dealer to turn this new vehicle into a loaner. So I presume, yeah. again, there's the software platform that's just easing the productivity of
exactly
that transition.
Right. So the other part that makes it difficult is if you're a dealer, you don't want to have to learn a bunch of new tools and softwares and skills and have five or six different logins, five or six different programs that have five or six bespoke and niche value props. You want the fleet management platform that can do all the things on your behalf. So I want to loan this car. I want to rent this car. I want to let somebody subscribe to this car. I just want to know where this car is. I want to have a single source of access to my entire fleet so that I can see it on one screen and I can make sure that I'm getting the best use out of it at that particular time. So we partner with OEMs to do that. How do we build better programs for loaners, courtesy vehicles, or potentially mobility? And then on the dealer side, how do we continue to connect your fleet to load your VINs onto our platform so that we can offer recommendations on how you can further profit from what's on your lot? And the good news for us is we're solving the problem that exists, and the case studies would suggest that there's a tremendous amount of value, tens of thousands of dollars a month that dealers can quickly tap into in 30 or 60 days if they just connect and automate a lot of these processes that we help them out with.
I won't go into too much detail on that, but I would, you know, respectfully, I would almost want to see some of the evidence of that. Just in terms of that, there is that size of an opportunity within 30, 60 days mm-hmm. for dealership. Again, I think it's something that, you know, we can follow up on and learn more about.
Sure.
Yeah, I got a question, just something I've been thinking about while we're at Digital Dealer and talking to a lot of the companies that are dealing with dealerships, especially what you're providing for dealers. I think it's great. Is there a 2.0 or 3.0 or 4.0 version of DealerWare whereby me as a consumer, if I have a car, if I'm already working a lot with a dealership, and if for some reason on a weekend, let's say my car doesn't even need to be serviced, let's just say for a weekend trip I wanted to use a particular car that's at that dealership, or if I wanted to take a road trip with my family, I as a customer and building that loyalty with that dealership, maybe instead of going out and renting a car first, maybe if I live by my dealer or if I have a really good relationship with that auto dealer, I'd like to tap into their fleet to see if they have some of vehicles
available
first.
The answer is going to be yes.
Okay, great.
I would think so.
Yeah.
Is that a 3.0, 4.0, 5? Because that would build my loyalty.
Rudy,
that would keep me.
I'm saying yes because this is Silver Car. So again, I don't know what the whole grand scheme is. This is me talking and not Russ, but like it's almost like they have Silver Car, and then this is like this is the prequel. This is Star Wars prequel.
Great.
To the New Hope.
So let's hear it from him.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You looked at our product roadmap, I think omnisciently, it seems like, and that's the single platform that we want to build. So what we've done over the past few years, we've talked a lot about service loaners today, but if you have, let's say, a need for an SUV, and you have an SUV at the dealership in that service loaner fleet, and it's not being used, why can't you come tap into that as mm-hmm. a local customer that owns the sedan,
a
but
truck.
Needs the SUV?
I constantly
Any car
need a truck.
Need.
Like sure. a truck is the thing that
revolutionizing
is
personal
that's
vehicles.
That's my pain point. And I don't want to go through the whole car rental thing or even going to Home Depot to
right.
get one. Like, I'd rather go to my dealer.
And as a dealer, why wouldn't I want to tap into an increasing share of your transportation wallet? Why should Hertz or Enterprise or Avis get that money when I've already spent money to establish the relationship, to build trust, to build loyalty? It's funny, the very first dealership we ever had on the DealerWare platform, Audi Stevens Creek, we talked to them about this problem a couple years ago. So we would see, they're in San Jose, California, 4 or 5 hour drive from Tahoe. And when Tahoe would get a mammoth snowstorm to come in, you would see that a bunch of service appointments were created for Friday afternoon. And everybody
need that all-wheel drive.
Everybody showed up wanting the Q7. And, you know, I talked to the GM, and the GM said, I wish I could just rent out that Q7 on a Tahoe package. Hey, for $300 for the weekend, you don't have to pretend your car needs service. Just come pick it up, take it to Tahoe, bring it back, and wouldn't that be cool? And the answer is, that would be very cool. But let's help you understand the implications of depreciation and taxes and other things that go for that for-profit or for-revenue ecosystem that current service loaners do not. So we empathize with the customer need, with the dealer need. We see that future, and we are going to be that platform that allows you to do all of those things. When you start to think about dealership units less as being sold to single people and more as a controllable fleet that have multiple use cases at the exact same time. It could be a rental, it could be a loaner, it could be subscribed to, or you could sell it. It's great.
Russ, as a last question, last topic here for you. You're a very private individual, meaning that there's not a whole lot of things out there of you, given especially your background, and might I also add, and again, I'm probably nobody in this world, but it's certainly impressive to see you speak and talk about this thing, you know, talk about it, almost as if you actually talk about these things so dispassionately. It's very business oriented. It's very by the numbers. But who is Russ Lerner? What do you do for fun, brother? Like, what puts that smile on your face right there?
Well, here we are. I love Vegas. I think Vegas is an amazing place.
Period. That's all you need to say after that, right?
This is one of my most fun places on earth.
Yeah, I have a great food, great shopping. The spa game, you know, for a late 30s guy is unreal. It's a very different Vegas than when I was in my early 20s. But I love it for different reasons. I love pop culture, so movies, TV, books. Ultimately, you talk about presentations. To me, everything is a form of storytelling or story consumption. So podcasts and books and shows and even industry presentations. How are they interesting? What story are you trying to craft? Can you create one? Can you receive one? All that stuff interests me and it fascinates me and I get a lot of pleasure from it. Separately from that, I spend a lot of time in the CrossFit box, which is good. I've placed some passion in there for self-improvement. And
you're doing the CrossFit games as well? Or
I watch them. I'm not nearly good enough to do the CrossFit games. I compete in the open and, you know, try and get in the top half of the 400,000 that do it. But I found a lot of parallels between starting companies and trying to get good at CrossFit. It requires discipline and grit. And they're both ultimately designed to break you down mentally. And so there's some reinforcing relationships. As you get good at one, you start to get better at the other, which is great. Keeps me healthy, et cetera. I got a dog at home. She's pretty awesome.
Do you like science fiction?
I watch science fiction more than I read it.
Got it. Okay.
But I definitely enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm a science fiction junkie, nerd, like love it very, very much. I do think that a lot of our future, whether it's cars, whether it's businesses, whether, you know, a lot of it is based in science fiction. And I think it's had a profound impact on society. And I think it's going to continue to have a profound impact on society and the way society pans out ultimately. You know,
absolutely.
If you could think it and write it and people could buy into it in an entertainment aspect, like maybe we can see it in the future.
Well, Russ, thank you, sir, very much.
Absolutely. Thanks for
joining Wisco Weekly. And for you, congratulations on completing your first podcast.
Yeah, thanks very much. This was cool. A lot of fun.
Listeners, I'll put the information on Dealerware on the episode page. Also, a shout out and a thank you to Courtney for help setting up this episode here. Courtney, she's our only fan member.
We have one fan.
We have one fan.
We have one live fan, but there's got to be at least another soul.
And this
out
was
there.
A live performance right here,
that's,
baby.
That's true. That's very true.
Listeners, on behalf of Kelly, Rudy, and myself, cheers, prost, l'chaim, kipis, nastravi, salud, kampai, mabruk, tutsins, gambe, yamas, nastarovie, to the customer experience.